rainy Thursday afternoon in Toronto. Thanks for joining us today on Hockey Central, spending the next 60 minutes talking hockey with you and talking hockey with Nate Schmidt, Vancouver Canucks defenseman. He'll join us towards the bottom of the hour here. Also, Harnarayan Singh from Hockey Night in Punjabi, outstanding play-by-play voice. I will never hear the name Nick Bonino without thinking about Harnarayan Singh, and hearing his Bonino call has very much become a signature. He has a new book out called One Game at a Time. We'll talk to Harnarayan here in about 10 minutes. Meanwhile, Brian Brick and Anthony Seward, good afternoon, gentlemen. And before we get into some of the headlines, whether it's Montreal signings or Joe Thornton playing in Switzerland, Rich Klune signing an AHL deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Stewie, you tweeted out a great picture of you and Willie, although as you call him, Mr. O'Ree, today his 85th birthday. From your perch and your history, what has Willie O'Ree, Stewie, meant to you?
Well, Willie's definitely a trailblazer in the game, the first black player to play in the National Hockey League. And, you know, I always come back to, you know, when people ask me, well, how bad did you have it growing up with race relations and stuff like that? I said, well, not as bad as Willie O'Ree. So I can't imagine how bad he had it back then, but he handled it gracefully. And, you know, he had no ill will towards the game. And, you know, we hear a story on how the NHL sort of, you know, found him working at the hotels and, you know, offered him a job, and he came in. He's become one of the biggest ambassadors in the NHL history. So happy 85th birthday to Willie. You're definitely a legend in this game. And every single person of a minority background has Willie O'Ree to thank for having an opportunity to play in the National Hockey League.
Berkey, your thoughts on Mr. O'Ree? I'm sure you've met him a number of different times, talked to him countless times at all. On the day of his 85th birthday, your thoughts on Willie O'Ree?
Well, just echoing what Stewie said, I mean, first off, I was at the league when we first brought Mr. O'Ree in, and Bryant McBride was instrumental in all that, and it was clear even back then, and I left the league, remember, in 98, so this is a long time ago. It was clear even then that Gary Bettman was totally dead serious about improving the National Hockey League's approach to an inclusion of people of color, boys and girls, men and women. And Mr. O'Ree has been a pioneer. He's a trailblazer. He was a great example. And as Anthony says, no bitterness at all. He's grateful for what hockey gave him. Mm-hmm. And what most people don't know is he was legally blind in one eye for almost all of his career.
Yeah. Yeah, lied so he could play, so no one could find out about it, so he could play in the NHL. And Stewie, that is so interesting about, you know, the lack of bitterness that Willie O'Ree doesn't have. And I can remember talking to Mike Marson, who was the second black player in the NHL, and he talked about, you know, a lot about what he went through being a member of the Washington Capitals and the horrible things that he heard and the threats and the insults and everything that happened to him. And, you know, I think of all the times that we've ever had to talk to Mr. O'Ree here on this program or other platforms. And you're right, like, bitterness is not part of the vocabulary. Like, it's always look forward for Willie O'Ree, Stewie.
Yeah, and you just meet him, and you know, you talk to him, and he just has a joy in his voice, and it, every time you see him, it's like the first time you ever met him. And again, when we talk about race relations and what we can do to improve, you know, for me, you know, if I had it bad or not so bad, I wanted to make it better for the next generation of kids. And that's how I think you eliminate it. It may take 10, 15, 20, even 50 years. But if you make it better for the next generation, that's how you eliminate these problems, not just in hockey, but all of society as well.
All right. So once again, happy birthday to Mr. O'Ree, 85 years old today. Also in Leafland, guys, Rich Klune is back on an AHL deal. The outstanding documentary last time we talked to Rich is called Hi, My Name is Dickie. Brian, you've talked about this before. The importance of having players like Rich Klune around your organization is invaluable. Your thoughts on the Leafs bringing back Rich Klune?
Well, I've only met him a couple times. I love this guy. He's tough as nails and very honest and open about his personal issues. And I think the people that have the courage, like when we asked Robin Lehner about his situation last week, the fact that people can openly address these issues is the first step toward people understanding the depth of these issues and having some empathy and the need for support systems. I think it's great.
Stewie, you know, the Maple Leafs have had, you know, you look historically and there have been, and a lot of organizations have done this, but for the purposes of the Maple Leafs, I mean, for a while there, Jim McKenney was one of the players or ex-NHLers, ex-Maple Leafs that the organization would use to talk to players that are going through, whether it's addiction issues, depression, mental health issues. And, you know, I can't help but thinking that if you have someone in that room that's gone through it, and to Berkey's point, is so public about it, and like, listen, like Rich Klune is an open book to everybody. You know, it doesn't matter if he's known you for 20 years or he just met you. He's an open book kind of guy. From a player's point of view, Stewie, how much does that mean to a team?
It definitely means a lot, because it's one thing for a guy to talk it. Well, you need to slow down, but here's a guy that lived it. You know, he lived a hard lifestyle, and he did it as a pro. So I think that's it's paramount for every organization to have a guy like Dickey Klune in there, because it keeps everybody accountable. It's one thing to listen to a player manager, but here's a guy that's actually on your team that's lived it, and he's one of those guys that's he's in the gym every single day. He's probably in the beaches somewhere lifting up a log or going for a swim in Lake Ontario. He's one of those guys. Probably one of the hardest working guys, and you know, he's actually helped me, because I'm not sure if you heard, I was a wild boy, as they would say back in the day, but I realized, you know, being out late in Toronto and seeing him having a good time, and he didn't need to have alcohol to have a good time. So I was like, you know what, yeah maybe I will slow down a bit. Here's Dickey having a great time. So he definitely helped me a lot, you know, with transitioning from, you know, player, you know, to lifestyle outside hockey. So Dickey Klune, every team should have a guy like this in their organization, because he holds everyone accountable, like I mentioned before, but great teammate, great person. He's going to have player development in his back pocket for as long as he wants to have it.
Congratulations to Rich Klune on the deal, and great move by the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. Okay, to an interesting story, and Hunter Ryan Singh is going to be joining us here from Hockey Night Punjabi in a couple of moments. Nate Schmidt at the bottom of the hour. Joe Thornton will play with HC Davos. He expects to start on Saturday. Joe Thornton will play until the start of the next NHL season, whenever that is. And guys, he will play for quote-unquote modest compensation. Berkey, what do you think modest compensation is for Joe Thornton in Switzerland?
I think he's got a place there, so I don't think he even needs a place to live. Typically, the European players get their housing looked after, and they give him a car and certainly grocery allowance. And the guys that play in Switzerland really enjoy it. But it's a great experience. It's good hockey. It's a big ice surface, so that's something to help Joe get ready for the season. I'm not surprised at all. Davos is beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been.
Stewie, first of all, what are your thoughts, Stewie, as a player on playing hockey in Switzerland? Once upon a time, I mean, us growing up, it was sort of a wasteland, you know, despite the fact that, you know, there's the this major championship that takes place around Christmas every single year that we all have a glance at, and it's a wildly popular sport. But it seems as if more and more now you're starting to see elite level players being developed by that country, much like Germany. It's an emerging power in hockey. Stewie, your thoughts on hockey in Switzerland and Joe Thornton's position in it?
Yeah, I love Switzerland. If I can go back and do it again, I would definitely play in that NLA here. And again, if a young guy that's debating, should I go to Russia or go to Switzerland, because just for the lifestyle, you know, every game, you know, is within 2-3 hours. You're back in your home bed after every game. And if I'm Joe, I'm asking for a free McDonald's coupon, because it's expensive. I think it's like $40 to get a triple cheeseburger over there meal. So they do have triple cheeseburgers, believe it or not. So, but Joe, I think he's getting ready. He's getting ready to come back and have a half-decent season, because in years past, you know, he hasn't really played in the offseason, but now he's getting ready to come back. So, you know, this is a bit of a tell. I would assume he's coming to Toronto because he knows there's going to be a lot of pressure coming into this market. I could see that's the reason why he's in Switzerland getting ready to go.
Hmm. You know, there's an old saying, use hockey, don't let hockey use you. And I look at this move, and one, yeah, it's to get ready for the next season. It wasn't a great season last year for Joe Thornton, as we all know. But two, listen, Joe Thornton, I think he's talked about this before, because during one of the lockouts, he went to Switzerland to play, met a Swiss woman, married her, started a family, etc. There's always a speculation that he's going to play his last year of hockey in Switzerland, whenever that ends up being. But This very much does fit the profile of something you would expect Joe Thornton to do. We'll pause on that. We're going to get to the Montreal stuff with the Gallagher and Allen contracts. In the meantime, our next guest is no stranger to this broadcast or others. You can watch him on Hockey Night in Canada. You can see him doing ringside for the NHL on Sportsnet. You can also hear him on Hockey Night Punjabi. Excellent play-by-play voice. Is now an author. The book is called One Game at a Time, My Journey from Small Town Alberta to Hockey's Biggest Stage. Our good friend Harner Ryan Singh joining us on Hockey Night on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Harner Ryan, how are you today, sir? It's good to be on with you.
Yeah, doing well. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Why the book? I ask all people this. Like, at what point did you say to yourself, because your story is a remarkable one of, you know, sleeping in airports and financial sacrifice to get your career going and challenges and hurdles and all of it. Like, at any point in the last however many years, I could have said, hey, Harner Ryan, sit still and write a book. But why did you decide to do it now?
Well, it's an interesting question for me, specifically because of where I'm at in life in terms of my age and my mid-30s. I never imagined I would be writing a book at this stage in my life. But when the publishers came and approached me for it, we were on the same kind of wavelength in terms of the message that I want to send to my fellow Canadians. The publishers also wanted to talk about a positive message of diversity. So, you know, this is a hockey book, but I think it's also everything the world is needing right now in terms of everything that's going on. And it's very interesting that the topic of the book has become even more timely when we first began this process. I mean, when we first talked about this idea, the racism hadn't come out to the forefront in the hockey world. We also didn't have everything that's going on in the United States in terms of police brutality. It hadn't come to the precipice that we're at right now as well. So I think the topic of the book has become more timely, and it's pretty perfect Canadian journey. Jeff, you and I have talked a lot. My entire experience growing up in southern Alberta in a small town would have been entirely and completely different had it not been for the game of hockey and how the game helped me create a rapport with my friends and classmates and teachers in that town, and then the dream to be a hockey broadcaster in terms of defying the odds. There's all of that in there, a huge obsession with Gretzky, the story of Hockey Night Punjabi, a lot of fun stuff, but a lot of serious topics that I think the sports world, we need to be having as a conversation as well.
It's an outstanding read. Berkey, I'll hand this over to you.
Yeah, I read it. Thank you, Harn, for sending me a copy, and congratulations on your first book. I say your first book because I think there's another one somewhere.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. That means a lot. I know you have your book out as well this fall, but from you, who's a legend in this industry, and I remember being able to sit with you in the office when you were working in Calgary and having you tell me the story of how you did the remarkable feat of drafting the Sedins together, and hearing that firsthand from you, that's something that I'll never forget. I appreciate your kind words. Glad you had the time to read it, and I'm glad you liked it.
Harner Ryan, if I can interrupt for one second. If Berkey has sat you down and told you the story about drafting the Sedins, don't feel special.
Well, of course, it's a popular one, but I, to give him some credit here, I actually asked him to tell me more details than probably what we've all heard, because it was a great afternoon to sit in his office and just chat.
Go ahead. Let me ask you a question. So there's a lot about the book I enjoyed. I sat down, I got the book, it came, and I sat down and read it cover to cover. I read fast, but I remember my daughters were here, and they were like, what are you reading, Dad? And I was like, I'm reading Harden Singh's book. And I explained who you were, and they recognized you from TV. But you got some great stories in there. Tell the listeners about hiding from Bob Cole.
Yeah, and it's a pretty crazy thing, and I kind of regret the way I went about it. But Bob Cole, being the legend that he is, and I grew up listening to him call so many great moments in hockey history. And when I was in the initial years for Hockey Night Punjabi, when I was paying for my own flights, I was also trying to figure out where at the Pearson International Airport to spend my nights as well. I couldn't, you know, if I was already paying for the flights from my own pocket, I couldn't afford to figure out a hotel room. So I was finding benches, and eventually I found the Sheraton hotel that's attached to the airport in the lobby there. And I was able to spend like 3 or 4 hours on the couch there with my luggage tied to my legs. And I noticed one evening that one night, late at night, that Bob Cole was there in the distance. I instantly recognized him, but I didn't have the courage or the guts to go up to talk to him, even though he was somebody I looked up to. And I didn't realize at the time either. Now when I reflect back on it, he was doing a similar journey in terms of always coming from the Maritimes to Toronto to call games. I was coming from Calgary to Toronto to call games. And I basically just sat there looking at him from the distance, but didn't have, because I was like, if I go up to him and say, hey, I do play-by-play for Hockey Night Punjabi, he might have said, oh, it's 2 a.m. What are you doing at the airport right now? And I didn't have a room, and I had all my luggage with me, and it would have been pretty embarrassing. But I regret that moment, because it would have been a great way to start a rapport with him and to learn a lot from a legend like himself. But that's one of the chapters, called Hiding from Bob Cole.
It's a great one. Stewie, go ahead.
We're talking about Willie O'Ree being his 85th birthday and the stuff that he had to go through. So what would be your message to the younger kids that, you know, may have experienced racism and it's sort of holding them back and trying to achieve their goals, not just in sports, but in society in general?
Yeah, you know, I think, Anthony, you know it yourself, being a person of color, this is something that we've all had to go through. And it's just kind of, you know, sometimes when you're going through it, you just feel like, okay, this is just how it is, and you have to go through it. But I will say that my message is that we're finally at a point in the world where we have the ear of society and humanity, for the most part, where people are willing to have some compassion and to hear about our experiences. And I think we need to talk about them. I think if we just hold it inside, like I did when I was a kid, when I experienced bullying and, you know, had a kid tackle me walking home from school, or throw my clothes around the change room, or pull out knives at me, or hold me from the throat and throw me against the wall when 9/11 happened, even though I was in Brooks, Alberta, and had nothing to do with what happened at the Twin Towers in New York, but it was just because I was wearing a turban and looked different. Like, all of those experiences, even the ones that I experienced in hockey arenas, being called all sorts of derogatory names and things like that, I would say that, you know, one of the things you have to really do is you have to understand it is the minority of people. It is not the majority. I had some people ask me, you know, okay, your story, the town of Brooks seems like it's rough. It was such a rough time. But actually, my family and I, we look back on the town of Brooks very fondly, because for the majority of people treated us well and were you know, very welcoming, and we had a good experience. But that also doesn't mean that I can erase some of those traumatic memories as well, right? So I think we have to talk about it, but we have to also realize it is the minority, because it is the minority of people out there who are ignorant and who have these racist views. I think we have an opportunity nowadays in the world. Like, if there's a guy like myself with a turban and a beard, and my playoff beard's always ready, as you guys know, if I'm able to you know, host playoff games for the NHL, for Sportsnet, anybody can achieve their goals and their dreams in Canada. And we're so lucky to be in a country where these opportunities are there for us.
You know, I don't know if I agree 100% with that, the idea that, you know, if I could do it, then anybody can do it, because you really do have a unique gift. Like, and I mentioned, and you put this blurb in your book, like, when I hear you call a game, it sounds lyrical. Like, there's a really nice pace to it. It's almost as if it's a song, or you're singing the game more than you're just calling it. Like, it's a beautiful tone to it, essentially, Harn Ryan. Where does that come from for you?
And it comes from my passion for Sikh music, which is Kirtan, and I've had the opportunity to perform with the percussion instrument called the tabla or harmonium, which is a hand-pumped organ, and singing as well. And I've been able to perform throughout Canada, the United States, and also in India, even at the Golden Temple three or four times. So music is the other passion. And I, you know, up until the book, I hadn't married the two together at all. It was something I was, I kept my kind of faith on one side and I kept the hockey world to the other. And, but you know, it's really cool to be able to do that through the book, to be able to share that story and, to share the story of my faith. And even my parents, when they came here in the 60s and, you know, not knowing what Halloween was, not being able to find lentils when they're vegetarian, and being able to put all of that together in the book, it was really special. And so the call, my style of calling a game, there's a big musical aspect that just naturally comes through, especially in a goal call where it's like you have a name like a Bonino or a Mitch Marner and you can really hold the last note out.
Those are the signatures, right? Like those are spectacular calls. Berkey, go ahead.
Yeah. Talk about your older sister, Gurdeep, who sounds like was a tremendous inspiration to you and a tremendous direct help to you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was so many moments in my life where I was discouraged from even attempting this industry. And I was told that, you know, because of how I looked and because of a lack of diversity on sports television, I wouldn't be able to make it. But she was always there for encouragement. And you know, in terms of also very early on, the passion for hockey in terms of how big of a Gretzky fan she was and the different lengths her and I went to try to get to Gretzky's games in Alberta, his charity golf tournaments. And it's just really special. She's such a loyal person, and she's gone above and beyond what I think any sibling would ever be expected of in terms of help and support. And I'm very lucky to have that. And, you know, we cherish those childhood memories, and we still have so many of those Gretzky Pro Stars cereal boxes in mint condition. And there's just, it's just crazy the amount of stuff that we've been able to keep. And I still have the toy microphone that I used to copy Ron McLean with when I was a kid in Brooks hosting my fake NHL awards and all this kind of stuff. So she's really been so nurturing in terms of in my passion for hockey.
It's great. Stewie.
I was born in Montreal, and I always pretend that I speak French, but I always butcher the language. Is it easier to call the game in English or Punjabi?
Well, that's a question that I would say has changed over time. In 2008, when we first began Hockey Night Punjabi, we had a lot of work to do behind the scenes in terms of creating some terms, because not everything translates over. And at the back of the book, One Game at a Time, I have a glossary with some of the fun terms. And, you know, there's obviously we created our own he shoots, he scores, which is Maria shot, Kita goal. And so it's a lot of hybrid stuff, but we also have a lot of fun with it. And one of the favorite ones from viewers has been penalty box, which we call Sajada Dabba, and it translates back into English as the box of punishment. And, you know, we also use penalty kill. We say murdered the penalty when the penalty actually gets killed. And we say penalty no moth bothered the. And so it's a lot of, there's more kind of dramatic flair to it. And I would say we add the spice to it. So there in the initial years, we were kind of creating a lot and really kind of focusing on that. And then eventually some of the stuff started coming out naturally. And so it was more of a challenge to call it in Punjabi just because it had never been done before. And we were the ones kind of setting that precedent. So the initial years, there was a lot of that, but now it's kind of just like, you know, it like the back of your hand.
And I can remember in some of the early years of Hockey Night Punjabi, I remember one conversation you and I had over what to call the puck because there was no direct translation, Harn Orion.
Yeah. Yeah. And we decided to keep it puck, but when you were explaining to someone who doesn't know what a puck is, it's the same shape as one of the famous Punjabi appetizers, which is an aloo tikki, and it's potatoes with spices baked together, and it's shaped into a hockey puck. So I remember that conversation as well. But we've kept puck as well. There's such a great, and I mentioned this in the book as well. The Punjabi community has a really well, the older generation, they have a strong connection with field hockey, and India won a number of gold medals in the Olympics a while back. consecutive Olympics in field hockey. So there is that connection there. But when you're explaining the game, and that's one of the beauties of our show too, is that we've been able to grow the sport at a very grassroots level, having people come up and say that they wouldn't have put their kids into minor hockey had it not been for our show. That stuff is music to my ears as a passionate hockey fan and as a Canadian.
But before we let you go, one of the things that, and you mentioned, the different terms for different moments in hockey. One of the ones that I always, and I'm just opening your book here to the back to all the different translations. One that I really enjoy seems to further accentuate that you have not just a marriage of hockey and music, but also of hockey, music, and food. Cross-check to the face, fed them some wood curry. Harner Ryan, how do you come up with fed them some wood curry?
Well, yeah, so obviously hockey sticks used to be, they used to be made of wood and not as they are nowadays. So when you have some a hockey stick made of wood and you're, cross-checking someone in the face and then you add the curry in there, you're feeding them, lekker di sabzi kwaditi, and so that's what it translates back to, fed them some wood curry, a cross check to the face, and we have a ton of fun with that, and thankfully their viewership, they love that kind of stuff too, and when you meet people in the community, that's the type of those are the types of terms and comments that they make.
Some great hockey stories, some really touching moments in this one, some really insightful moments in this one. We can tell how much hockey means to you, music, your faith, all of it, all means to you, and how much your position in the industry means to you, and we are richer for your position in it. The book is called One Game at a Time, My Journey from Small Town Alberta to Hockey's Biggest Stage. Harner Ryan Singh has been our guest. Harner Ryan, this has been an absolute delight. It's a fantastic read. I love it. Berkey's read it. He loves it as well. Encourage everyone to run out and get their copy of One Game at a Time. It's an inspiring story. Lots of laughs and lots of pauses to reflect and think about some of the issues that are even greater than hockey. Thanks so much for stopping by, Harner Ryan. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
Harner Ryan Singh from Hockey Night Punjabi and does ringside, as you can see on Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. There's a real joy of hockey that you can hear in the voice, Brian, of Harner Ryan Singh. And he's almost like a, because, and I'm guilty of this as well, bitter, grumpy, everything's awful. And then when I have a conversation with Harner Ryan about hockey, you realize, Brookie, that they're actually positive people in the game as well. Give us your thoughts on Harner Ryan Singh.
Well, I hate most cheerful people. I do. They get on my nerves. But with Harn, he makes you smile. That's just him. It's not an act. It's not just hockey. He's excited about his music. Like, this guy's a rock star in that genre of music. Like, he's played with some of the greatest musicians in his field. And he's toured. And, like, it's pretty cool. But he's always upbeat. He's always happy. It's infectious.
It seems like he's never had a bad day, hey Stewie?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what I like, and I always talk about the kids. And here's a guy that lived in small town Alberta, a visible minority, and he mentioned he's had a rough time. I bet he hasn't mentioned half the stuff that's happened, but here he is with a positive attitude, a positive outlook on life, and it's helped him not just in society, but working up the hockey ranks as well. So I'm definitely impressed by him. He's one of the stars of CBC, absolutely.
He's outstanding. All right. On that, we will we'll step away. And again, the book is called One Game at a Time, My Journey from Small Town Alberta to Hockey's Biggest Stage. Harner Ryan Singh was our guest. We'll step away. We'll come back with Nate Schmidt of the Vancouver Canucks. Surprised to end up there? One of the questions we'll ask Vancouver defenseman Nate Schmidt in moments. It's Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. It's Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. Nate Schmidt joins us now, a defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks. And that was a move that certainly raised some eyebrows around the NHL. Nate, thanks so much for stopping by today. Now that you've had a few days digested and have dealt with Vancouver media, some national media as well, has it hit you? I'm always curious, like, when it becomes profound. Has it hit you yet that you're a Vancouver Canuck and no longer a Vegas Golden Knight?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. You know, I would say in that second morning is when it really starts to hit you. That initial shock kind of wears down. You start thinking, you know, you start going through all the things that you got to do before you, you start moving. But, you know, it's something that, you know, I spoke a little bit about yesterday. You know, I've been reached out to by a lot of the guys and the staff and everything. And so each time that, you know, you talk to a new guy and you know, you have these types of conversations, you start getting that excitement around a team that's got a lot of really good young talent. And they have a guy like myself will be come in and be, I guess, more of a veteran guy. You know, it's weird to say after you know, being in Vegas where we were pretty much all the, you know, around that same age. But, yeah, you know what? You know, I talked to Keith Ballard yesterday a lot about the city of Vancouver. It's always been something that it's my favorite place to visit when I'm on the road. It's a beautiful city. So, I mean, a lot of things to be excited about, given, you know, what had happened a couple days ago.
It almost seems as if, and I know the Washington West jokes are out there, but it's like reunion time. I mean, Beagle, Holtby, yourself. Once upon a time, L.A. was sort of Philadelphia West. Is Vancouver becoming Washington West now?
You know what? I'm really excited to be back with those guys. They're two unbelievable guys. Braden Holtby is one of my best friends that I have in hockey, and so a guy that I've kept in touch with. And so he was actually the first guy that texted me after the news, and he just said, "Hey, man, I know there's a lot of things going on in your head right now, but I'm going to be selfish and be super happy for you that you're coming." So I got to chat with him later that night, which was good. You know, anytime, you know, Steve could talk about it too. Anytime you're moving from teams, you got someone that you know and you got someone that you already got a connection with. You know, I know a few guys on the team already. It makes it a lot easier to make that transition.
Nate Schmidt, Vancouver defenseman, with us now. Berkey, go ahead.
So, Nate, one of the great things about you as a player is that you're always upbeat. That's a valuable asset to a team. Is that the way you've been since you were a kid?
I try to be. There's just no way, you know, if you go through, you know, we still play hockey, you know, I still get a chance to do what I love every day. You can't dwell on some of these things that kind of bring you down or that kind of punch you in the gut for a moment. You see the positive sides of, you know, going to a really good and up-and-coming team. You know, a team that we were one goal away from losing to if we don't score first in the third period of a game seven. You know, so it's a team that's close and a team that doesn't go away. And that's the type of mentality, that's the type of, you know, grit and grind to your team that you want. You want to have those guys to dig in. And that's what the fun part about, you know, going to a new group. And I have been. This is kind of me. Sometimes, you know, Braden Holtby and I are both the exact opposite guys. And he used to give me like, "Nate, I need about 5 minutes from you right now. You're a little bit too much."
Well, you know what? I will tell you, Nate, as a former general manager, it's something that we look for at the draft. That's a big plus. Like Tim Mussolini, one of the great things he did for me in Anaheim was he brightened up the room because it's a bunch of grumpy guys generally.
I mean, sometimes there's a pressure, you know, there's pressure to our job here, right? And there's a lot of eyes on what you do. And I think if you go on thinking about how negative that could be and how much pressure it eats you up, you know? And so that's where I like to think that's where I come in and hope, you know, I know when it's time, to hunker down and get ready. You know, I've learned that over 6 or 7, 8 years here now, but you got to make sure you have fun with this game, because if you don't, then it starts to eat you up.
Stewie.
I just want to go back to the Vancouver series. Like, was there any panic in the dressing room? Like, you guys were up a couple games, and they put Demko in. He just was, you know, playing lights out. Did anyone consider, like, taking a slap shot at his head and be like, "You can't solve this guy"?
Somebody run him over. You know, they're trying to get Revo or Will Carey. Someone run him over. He's playing too well, you know. you know, it was weird. We thought we were playing really well, and it just he kept playing well, and their defense was playing really well. They weren't, you know, we were getting, you know, 30, 40 shots a game, but it didn't matter. We weren't really getting in tight, and if we did, he'd make a huge save. So, I mean, there was a time, I would say, probably halfway through the second period, I'm like, this is not happening again. This can't happen again. This is, I mean, we're playing really well, and this kid's playing ridiculous. I can't believe it. And then, obviously, we know that Shea scores that big goal, and then we move on. But, you know, it's like I said, it's hockey's a funny game. And like I said, one goal the other way, and, you know, we're chasing it down there at the end of the game, and, you know, you never know what could happen.
I'm always curious, and we're with Nate Schmidt of the Vancouver Canucks, so formerly the Vegas Golden Knights, talking about the Vegas-Vancouver series. I'm always curious what players do when you're in that situation, because we all watch the games, and we're saying to ourselves, you know, if you ignore what the score is and you just look at how the game is being played, you know, Vegas is caving them in. Like, you guys are all over them. Like, it's tilted rank, and I would imagine in that situation, Nate, that players, because you guys are so superstitious and routine, to get out of your funk, like how many things did you change every day? Routines, habits, the way you tape your stick, I don't know. Like, were the things that you guys, like, did to try, I don't know, voodoo dolls, sacrifice a chicken, yeah. I don't know. Were there things that you did to try to change things?
Man, you know, adapt or die, right? You know, it was, for me, I like to, I don't, you usually have one or two specific things I need to do each game. I kind of just, you know, how I feel that night and just kind of, you know, but there were some guys I found that you could tell were tampering with sticks a little bit more and, you know, things like that. And you're starting to think, you know, that stuff, it does get to you. You know, you're getting a lot of chances. It's different if you're not getting scoring chances and you're not getting to those areas and you're down in games where you've lost the last two. But we had been, and that's what I think is what gets guys frustrated. I mean, I used to, you know, stick a brand new stick in the toilet and flush it, you know, by, you know, I was baptizing my stick. I had to get rid of that because I felt like it was getting to be too much. So I didn't see that stuff, thankfully.
Oh, that's hilarious. With Nate Schmidt of the Vancouver Canucks. Berkey.
So, Nate, I'm an Edina boy. I grew up there, and I know you're from St. Cloud. Talk about playing for Coach Lucia at the University of Minnesota. How was the big rink?
Yeah, oh, man. I'll tell you now, I've gone back. I come back here each summer to train, and going back out on the Olympic size ice, I actually get lost sometimes. It's actually really tough. I'm impressed with how guys – I don't even remember how I did it in college, but Don was a big part of my career, you know, him and Mike Gensel. Jake Gensel's dad, who's the D coach there, they really helped me. You know, I wasn't, you know, from my freshman year on, I didn't have a great year, didn't come in great shape. And there's a learning curve sometimes for guys that just come in, and I never really had worked out yet. So there was a big jump for me. And that's where, you know, having experienced coaching Don and Genner, that was just really helpful to me and understand, like, this is not your potential when you come in your freshman year. You got to be able to raise that ceiling each and every day. And that's something that I've tried to live by, you know, throughout my whole career. There's no end in sight. You can't just think that this is, you know, who you are. You always got to push for something, work a little harder, trying to get to the next step that you can take as a player.
Stewie.
Just looking at that roster in your final year, you had Bustad, Eric Hall, and Mike Riley, Brady Shea, Justin Hall. That seems like it's a you know, Stanley Cup contending roster. How'd you guys not win it that year?
You're killing me.
Goaltending, I bet, right? Goaltending.
So, you know, I can't remember. We lost to Yale in this first game, an upset. They went on to win the national championship that year, but all it takes is one, you know, our guy, one of our defensemen, you know, we started the period in the OT, and we tried to wheel the puck behind the net, and the puck got a little wet, and he looked down and stopped. Their guy comes up, picks it up, 7 seconds in overtime, out front, game over, career over. I was like, I didn't even have my helmet on.
So in Toronto, was it Justin Hall?
No, it was not. No, it was not. It was. Okay. I won't say the guy's name. I don't need to. It wasn't one of the guys you named, no.
Okay. With Nate Schmidt of the Vancouver Canucks, Berkey uses the term churn, and I do wonder about, because we heard, like, like Nate, and you guys heard it as well. Like, there were so many names of Vegas players that were out there over the weekend. Once it became obvious, okay, Alex Pietrangelo is going to Vegas. Like, so many names were out there. I can only imagine what it was like, you know, to be one of those players over the weekend. And every time you're on social media, every time you're on the internet, like everywhere, phone calls, texts, everybody's name is out there. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard to see that way. You know, you sign a contract, an extension. You think you're hoping that it's going to be spend the entirety or not at least most of your career there. especially, you know, from what was communicated to me. But you know what I'll tell you is this: is that you know when you see it was pretty much everybody, and it was guys and Alec Martinez and I, we kept in close touch about, you know, here we have a guy come in, and I was I didn't think it was going to come down to me. I was hoping it wouldn't, but unfortunately that's when you look at it, there had to be some type of move. But with every door that shuts on you, another chance to be on a team like in Vancouver, that you're just, I mean, I'm getting pretty giddy about how you can have such a young group, and I don't have to go play against Quinn Hughes or Pettersson and these guys anymore, which is nice to be on this side of things. But it was a pretty stressful time for our guys, and they're just, hey, did you hear anything? Nope, I don't have anything yet. Okay. And so it was tough, especially since, I thought I got traded a few times. Someone told me, I got people texting me, hey, you're on Florida. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was sitting in my deer stand. What are you talking about? you got about 36 hours later, then it becomes true. So it was a pretty tumultuous time for the unrest of just not knowing. You know, we're creatures of habit. It's fun to know or be in the loop about what's happening, what's going on.
With Nate Schmidt of the Vancouver Canucks. Berkey, last question to you.
Well, just, you'll love Vancouver, Nate. It was, I did two tours of duty up there, one as assistant GM and one as GM. What a beautiful city and what a great city. You'll love it there. I wish you nothing but the best. So one last one. Just following up on Jeff's question, I'm not trying to pick at a nerve here, but we've wondered on the air, is there too much turnover of the roster there? I mean, you can argue they're a better team with the changes they've made, but Paul Stastny went there with high hopes. You re-upped with high hopes. Is there too much turnover?
Yeah, well, first, I appreciate it. You know what, Bertie, yeah, I'm really excited about going to the city, and he's got a lot of passion there, beautiful city as well. So that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. And to be honest, I've heard nothing but great things about the group, which is also something to be really excited about. As a player, that's what you want. I guess I just rewind it back to, being the original Misfits. I don't think that group, it's naive to think, and you know this, and Stu, you guys know this, it's naive to think this, you can be there forever, right? And that the group will stay together forever. But you had high hopes that that the core guys would be there, especially the ones that were there from the beginning. It's been hard in the group. I mean, I guess I don't know what it's been like when me got in from them, but to see guys from your group, move out and in and out so quickly, and I know that they're chasing down a cup, but it's hard to say.
That's put you on the spot a bit. You know what? That's a good enough answer right there.
Okay. Yeah. No. I would just say it's definitely putting guys on notice. Let's just leave it at that.
That's a great answer. And you're a wonderful defenseman. Vancouver is certainly a huge beneficiary of everything that happened over the weekend. Nate, enjoy Vancouver. Sounds like you already will. Be well. Look forward to seeing you back on the ice when the season returns. Thanks so much for taking time today.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Stay safe.
There he is, Nate Schmidt, defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks. You know what he's trying to say, Berkey. He's trying to say, yeah, you're right. Like, we were the guys that came in with the chips on our shoulder. That was our identity. That's who he were. We were the guys that weren't wanted on the voyage. All the ships left, and we were still on the dock. They didn't want us, and now we're here together. That's who we are. And then piece by piece, not just players, but a coach as well, all got thrown overboard.
Yeah, but I didn't. I shouldn't have put him on the spot like that. Stewie took my question away. He knows I do the rosters, so I was going to ask him about playing with Justin Hall and Eric Halla. He just Googled it while we were talking. I did it last night.
Berkey, you're right.
but I think there is, like, I'm really curious to see how Vegas comes out, because again, like, and now after a few seasons, like, Vegas sneaks up on no one. Vegas sneaks up on no one. And now that you start to see the identity crumble and you start to have a lot of hockey players whose names have been out there, whether it's Max Pacioretty or Alex Tuch or Jonathan Marchessault, go right down the list. Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, I'm really curious to see how this team plays when they get back after having gone through all of this. Did they get an outstanding defenseman in Alex Pietrangelo? No doubt. Are they a better team on paper? Absolutely. I just wonder about the team part of all of it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how this all comes
together
now.
And that's what I was getting at. Also, the long-term effect of, okay, so you weren't one of the guys that got shipped out, but you watched Nate get shipped out. You watched Paul get shipped out. Yeah. At some point, it's demoralizing. Now, my guess is Kelly McCrimmon will address that with the team when he gets them together for the start of the year and say, look, we're going to keep making the team better until we win. Do your job, and there won't be more changes. So it could be a positive.
All right, on that, we'll step away. More Hockey Central in a couple of moments. Merrick alongside Berkey and Stewie. We're back in a flash. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, a couple of minutes left in the program here. I want to thank Harner Ryan Singh for stopping by. His book called One Game at a Time. I want to thank Nate Schmidt for stopping by, Vancouver Canucks defenseman. And Berkey and Stewie, want to spend the last couple of minutes talking to you, Berkey, specifically about Burke's Law. New book. It's out. Written with Stephen Brunt. Between your stories and his writing, this will be must-read for hockey fans. I do ask you this one question, though. Why do so few general managers write books? You guys have all the stories. And I just think, as someone that has, you know, followed hockey, studied hockey, member of the Hockey Research Society for years, like, I think of all the stories that have vanished and are no longer part of the game because general managers haven't written books or left anything behind. Why don't you guys write more books?
Well, I'm way more interesting than most of those guys are.
Scotty Bowman says, what? Sorry, what?
I just read Ken Dryden's book on Scotty. I just read it about 6 months ago. It was excellent. Yeah. But no, I think I have some stories to tell. There's some management lessons in there about handling problems with players, owners, other GMs, barn fights. I mean, I think it's an interesting read, and Stephen Brunt did a marvelous job putting it together.
Stewie, your favorite general manager that you wish would write a book?
Mike Keenan. But he probably wrote a book. But I just want to know, I want to add, like, you know, your video game Street Fighter, there's no one fighting in a barn. People are fighting at a bathhouse, an alley, a park, at the dock. I want to know, Berkey, why you chose barn.
I've been in a couple of bar fights. They're not much fun.
You know, for me, I always wish that Bill Torrey would have written a book about taking the Islanders from a blank sheet of paper to a dynasty inside of a decade. That, to me, would have been one of the more fascinating ones. And that first training camp in Peterborough, where about 100 players were invited, they had to send one back because of things that happened extracurricularly.